Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Merrick alongside Bourne. Bottom of the hour, Justin. By the way, good afternoon, Justin. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I always get excited when I get a chance to talk to Kevin Woodley. I'm assuming you've spoken to Kevin before.
I have. Yes, he's wonderful.
Like, he is. Kevin, for those that don't know, does some work for us out in Vancouver at Sportsnet. Is from In Goal magazine, writes for NHL.com. He is one of the go-to people in this industry to talk about goaltending. And to me, goaltending is one of the positions in the NHL that doesn't, I feel, get talked about properly enough. And I'm guilty of that as much as anybody else. Like, do you not get the feeling that you should know more about, I guess, as an analyst, that you should know more about the position than we do?
Yeah, it's such a niche position. I'm very fortunate that my time with the Marlies, I got to sit beside Piero Greco, who is the team's goalie coach. And, he would have the goaltenders come sit beside him, and I had the luxury of listening in and hearing all the tips and pointers and all the different details that go into it. You know what really struck me that I never thought about is how much of playing a two-on-one happens before the two-on-one plays the blue line. Like, these are the little things that you would never think about. Maybe it's something I can ask Kevin about, but, like, when the goalie comes out of their crease affects their depth. There's just a lot more thinking into the position than I think most analysts are willing to put or even know how to put in.
And for the two-on-one specifically, that can be a coach thing, not just necessarily a goalie thing, right? Like, I remember, Marty Brodeur's big thing, talking to people that played in New Jersey with Marty, and on two-on-one specifically, Marty was always just take away backdoor, that's it, right? Some coaches want the goalie to challenge, coaches want the goalie to play more 50-50 in case of a pass. Marty obviously just wanted the defenseman to take away the backdoor tap-in. Give me the shooter. I'll challenge one-on-one. Like, you're right. There is a lot that goes into every single... I remember talking to someone with the Maple Leafs once about Eddie Belfour. And I think you and I have talked about this. This is a member of the Leafs coaching staff. And I said, when you guys did meetings, special teams meetings, for penalty kill, how often was Belfour vocal? And this coach said, all the time. And it was usually the same thing before every game. It was Ed Belfour would isolate one player on the other team's power play and would say, look, this is your job. Take away his shot. If you take away his shot, I can focus on the other four. That'll give us a chance. I just need to know as a goalie that I don't have to worry about that shot. If you take away that shot, then we're good. That's what I want out of you, four players in front of me. Honestly, to me, it's the most fascinating position. Goalie and defense is the most fascinating position.
Yeah, no, that was common too. The another Marlies thing was those penalty kill meetings, where some goalies wanted to sit in on the PK meetings and some didn't. And I think eventually at some point, Sheldon just said, you have to be there. Like, you have to know the system we're playing so you know where the shots are going to be coming from. Like, I don't care if you're in your own little world. Like, this is part of your part of your role is you're a big PKer for us. So, there's lots to it. I look forward to talking to Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin's awesome. Okay, let's get to what we saw last night. And yes, Justin Bourne, we will park some time talking about Taylor Hall scoring a goal with the Boston Bruins as Justin Bourne goes to the pay window on that one. It's a 5-2 final. It's Winnipeg Jets over the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's no Matthews, no Nylander, etc. We all know who's in and who's out. Was a good performance by the Winnipeg Jets. A couple of really key moments. A flashpoint with Nick Ehlers on Mitch Marner. Jack Campbell gets the hook. What are some of your takeaways from last night from the other Maple Leaf side of things or the Winnipeg side of things?
Well, I'll give you a preview of my article for Sportsnet.ca today. One of the things that struck me was breakdowns by Alex Galchenyuk. There's a couple situations in the game where the Leafs are in sort of a forecheck in a pressure situation, trying to, sort out the puck possession and all that, and he's in the wrong spot. And not so much in the wrong spot, but just not erring on the defensive side of things enough. He loses body position. He's the guy who loses body positions on Connor. on the goal that makes it 2-on-1. He's a step behind there. And then he's the guy on the Scheifele goal where he's supposed to be covering for Hall. He's a step behind, and all of a sudden Scheifele's able to step out, you know, on that breakaway with his speed unimpeded. So, you know, it brings to light a question for me heading into playoffs of, is that just a bad game, a couple of bad moments, or do they maybe not feel like they're going to be able to trust this guy in the big games, and what happens to Galchenyuk's role as we move towards playoffs?
So that goes into, because a lot of people just, you know, a casual hockey fan might, you know, glance at the game and read the game sheet and go, oh, Galchenyuk scored, he must have had a good game.
Yeah, I didn't even mention that in my article. I probably should have. But yeah, no, that's...
Just peeling strips off him. But no, like, yeah. You're right. Like, I think we talked about this before. I don't know, because there was a lot of hue and cry about the Leafs have found another top six forward. Oh, they've polished up this diamond in the rough and they're set to go. Don't waste assets on trying to get another top six forward or trying to get any type of forward, whether he plays in your top six or top nine. They're fine. Concentrate on the blue line. And I think you and I were on the same page about this one, in that I'm not sure that Sheldon Keefe wants to bank his playoff chances, or Kyle Dubas and his, you know, reputation wants to bank those chances on someone who's a reclamation project 10 games into that project. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I absolutely do. What's going to be interesting to watch is, like, when they're healthy, what, you know, where is he? Because I can see them being like, we got an asset here, and if we need someone to spot in, we can use him. But, like, I can't see a healthy lineup where Galchenyuk is playing in their top six. Like, as much as that would be great, I just can't see it. You know, you add Foligno and eventually a healthy Riley Nash. I just don't think he's a guy who's a part of this healthy roster in the playoffs. But no one stays healthy in playoffs, and I understand them thinking that he's a nice asset. If for someone to pull out of the press box and put him in, you feel pretty comfortable you get some good games from him.
You know, I've wanted to get in, and it's a Friday, so let's, you know, loosen the collars a little bit here. There's something that I've always been curious about to talk to you about, because you talk a lot about deployment and where this guy's going to be and who he's with. And by and large, like, you understand that the perfection line stays together as much as they can with the Boston Bruins. And listen, Matthews and Marner are married at the hip. There's a floating third on that roster. I remember talking to a coach once, an NHL coach, and I was making some ridiculous point about, you know, getting lines set early in the season and keeping them together and letting them grow with each other throughout the season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he said to me, I couldn't disagree more. Mm. He said, you're way, way off. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, if you're a playoff team, part of the reality of your season / probably in the playoffs as well is injuries. And if all these players only know how to play with a couple of players, we're screwed, because injuries are going to be a factor. So I like to mix up my players throughout the year. Sure, there'll be stretches where they'll all stay together, where they're all going to be together for a couple of weeks or 10 games or whatever it goes. But I always deliberately try to mix them up just so everybody has a good idea of how to play with one another. Because the reality of playoffs is, don't get too comfortable, because this could all change. What do you think of that?
Yeah.
As it relates to the Maple Leafs specifically.
Makes a lot of sense. And I know that's one thing that Sheldon Keefe believes heavily in, is figuring out, you know, what you have in different pairings, what you have in different lines, and how they look together, just so he knows how to deploy them. You know, I think they really don't like how things went last season when you head into game five of a best of five, and it's the first time you've had Matthews, Marner, and Nylander together as a line. You know, I don't think, or was it Tavares, whichever, they have three of the big four on a line.
Yeah.
So I don't think they'll like that, and I think this year they're happy to have some time to experiment. I think you just wish the season was longer so you had more time, but certainly they don't mind mixing it up a little bit to see what they have.
To last night's game, anything stand out from you outside of, you know, tearing one out of Galchenyuk here, good, bad, or otherwise?
Well, just, you know, a bit of an underwhelming performance. A little concerned about old David Rittich, if he's got to step in. That was a tough spot, but boy, everyone's looking at Mitch Marner on that goal. What was David Rittich doing on the fourth goal?
Trying to push it past, trying to get the puck out of harm's way and maybe not realizing, although I don't know how, considering he's played against him a number of times, and it's not exactly a secret that Nick Ehlers is fast. Just trying to get the puck away from Nick Ehlers. Instead of playing a shot, just tried to cut it off at the pass and get the puck out of trouble. I'm assuming that's what it looked like
to me. You're right. It was just really, really awkward play on a number of fronts. A couple of people that probably could have exercised a little bit more care with the hockey puck there between old Marner and Riddick. One of those ones. What did Marner say after the game? I believe he said "crap happens" with a curse word.
Yeah. I love. I was talking to JD Bunkus about this on Good Show this morning. I love players who after a game give you a shrug. Like, I love players who, after a game, aren't going to do the big performance about how disappointed they are and angry at themselves. Like, I think it's the whole... I think you've talked about this before. The performance of losing and the act that we expect players to go through. And if they don't, we somehow question their desire to win or their competitive nature. I don't want... Like, if I'm a coach, if I'm a general manager, even if I'm a fan... I don't want these guys to think they're the best or the worst, depending on their performance. Like, I know Jack Campbell wanted to take all of that last night. This one's on me. I got to be better. I know what I need to do. Point all the fingers at me. Like, I'm not saying that that is a performance, but if he really does feel that way, man, I feel bad for Jack Campbell. But I'll tell you what, hearing Mitch Marner kind of shrug it and just say, hey, man, stuff happens, I'm totally fine with that. I don't think that's a hockey player being frivolous. I think that's a hockey player being sane, to be honest with you, Justin.
Yeah, because stuff does happen. You know, that's a completely reasonable point to make. Over the course of a hockey season, things get weird here and there. It's not always going to go perfectly. Maybe it's weird to hear a guy so honestly say that, but hey, there's bad luck and weird bounces, and that was just a one-off of a play, not a trend of someone effort-wise.
And at the end of it, too, Nick Ehlers is an elite player. Like, that, at the end of it, that's just a great play by Nick Ehlers. Great plays are going to happen against you, just like you're going to pull off some great plays as well.
Sure.
You know, Elliot, you know, Friedman not too long ago was talking about Ehlers as a stealth Hart Trophy candidate.
Like, I remember hearing Elliot say that, and I would like to say, Elliot, pump the brakes. Come on.
But he had, like, you know what? It's funny, too. Like, when you start to hear trade rumors about yourself... As a player, one of two things happen. And thankfully for the Winnipeg Jets fans, Ehlers became defiant and angry and played with a chip on his shoulder. And I think that's always the best case scenario. The other situation is you can just get totally deflated and this team doesn't want me. The opposite has happened with Ehlers, and he's turned himself into a super high-level player. He's one of those players now where it's almost at the point where you can't call him underrated because people have called him underrated now for long enough. It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. Remember, we used to have that conversation about Louis Erickson like 10 years ago. Oh, he's the most underrated player in the NHL. Yeah, but you've been saying that, and everybody else has, for 4 years, so he's not underrated anymore. We're probably at that point with Nick Ehlers now, aren't we?
Yeah,
you just say he's good. Kyle Connor's the same way.
You know, this is the interesting debate about coaching because, you know, Paul Maurice has had the conversations and people say, why don't you play him more? You know, if he's a stealth Hart Trophy candidate, you know, how come he's only playing 16 minutes a night or whatever? And it's they believe that he's best suited in softer matchups and that he can't necessarily do these things against the best matchups. So part of the success he has, I do believe, is because of the positions Paul Maurice puts him in, which it's the chance to use his to maximize his abilities. And that's no slight on anyone. They're just getting the most out of his game.
What did you make of Jack Campbell last night? Is this the this is the Jack Campbell we were all scared of?
No, not for me. I mean, everyone's going to have kind of off nights, and I didn't think anything was overly egregious. You know, part of it is probably for Sheldon Keefe. It's just a warning shot to the team. Like, you know, changes need to be made. If you're not going to play for this guy, maybe you'll play for this guy. You know, I didn't think it was a terrible performance. You?
No, not at all. And I'm given the body of work that he's laid before, you know, the head coach and the rest of the team, I think if anyone's bought the benefit of the doubt on a game, it's probably Jack Campbell here. It's probably Jack Campbell. I was fine with it. When I looked at watching that game yesterday, because You know, there's no Austin Matthews. There's no William Nylander. One of the interesting things about it is when you have easy shooters, okay, like Nylander and Matthews. Matthews, best in the NHL. Easy shooters that can turn a game around quickly. A lot of the pressure is off. A lot of the anxiety goes away when you have those guys. Did it not seem like that was a Maple Leaf team last night that was trying to figure out how to grind for every goal? Mm-hmm. That they weren't going to get the easy one? I mean, Matthews gives you the easy one. Nylander can give you the easy one. At times, John Tavares, Mitch Marner can give you the easy one. But it was a game last night where the easy one wasn't there for the Maple Leafs, and it felt like they had to grind for everything.
Yeah, it's a huge difference between elite teams that have elite scorers and teams that are just battling through every night. And, you know, you watch some teams, you just think, and every night when you don't have that elite guy, every game is such a struggle to find it. The Leafs get a lot of wins because they only play as well as the other team, not better than the other team. But then their elite talent just shoots one in the hockey net. You know, like it's such a fun part of, or a funny part of coaching when you sit in the coach's office and assess the game. It's like, yeah, I mean, we played as well as they did. They just shot it in the hockey net more. Sometimes you don't need to overthink it. That's what the game's about.
It is. Any other takeaways from last night before we move on?
No, I think that I've exhausted my Leafs takes from last night.
Okay, the takes are done, and we're standing by to see about the Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks. Vancouver will not play tonight, as we all know, against the Oilers. Just to revisit that conversation quickly, Vancouver's not playing. There is a media avail today. Bo Horvat and Jim Benning will speak. And I look at it and I say, that probably means that Travis Green's not good to go. That was one of the concerns here is like, okay, it's one thing for the players. It's another, is the coaching staff going to be healthy enough to be behind the bench? I don't know if I'm reading into something that's maybe not there, but when I see that Jim Benning speaking and not Travis Green, I wonder about the coach.
Yeah, well, you've had your finger on the pulse here of this whole thing so far. You did call those games being canceled tonight and tomorrow. I would say you're probably right about that. It is fascinating. You know, maybe he'll be back in time for them to have for Monday night's action. Maybe that's part of the reason they wanted to push things off. But they're in disarray, man. They're scrambling to put this thing together. It's great for them that they've got a couple of games. I honestly, like, if you had put David Ayers in for a full hockey game or, you know, had the Canucks come in the position they were going to be put in, I would have bet the Canucks would have gotten beat, you know, worse than a David Ayers game. Like, I just thought they were in such a brutal position. You know, no one playing, everyone's sick. It just, it was going to be really bad. So I'm happy for them. They have an extra couple days.
How long does it take a team? I mean, you've been through a number of training camps. One of the things about training camp is you always hear, oh, it's too long. Oh, it's too long. Oh, we're ready. Oh, we don't need this time. But then again, you don't head to the training camp after all being sick from a disease and a pandemic. How long do you think it would take players, and teams have gone through this, Dallas, New Jersey, Buffalo, etc. How long do you think it would take players to be comfortable enough to say, I'm ready to compete at the NHL season, even though I've just been shut down for 2.5 weeks in the middle of it?
Well, there's a couple of different variables. Like, you know, your hands are going to be off. You know, after a couple of weeks off the ice, it's amazing how, like, the feel and the intricacies of, like, you know, the real skill players working the puck around. It, you know, you need a couple of skates to kind of find that again if you haven't skated for a couple of weeks. But the bigger thing is just, like, you lose your cardio so fast. And particularly when you're, like, an elite athlete in terms of, like, peak cardio. You need peak cardio to play NHL hockey. It's an anaerobic sport. It stops and starts, and you really need to be on it. You lose that so quick. So after a week, you need a few skates to get back. After 2 weeks or after being sick, you know, you're not going to be right for at least a week or so, but at least after a few days, you can justify it. One day back on the ice, you know what it's like to work out, Jeff. It's worse after 2 days, you know, when you do a good hard workout and you haven't done much in a while. The Canucks were going to be just useless on Friday and Saturday this week, so I'm happy for them to get just a little bit of a buffer.
And then obviously you worry about injuries, right? Like that becomes, geez, that becomes very much a scary thing, let alone what the scoreboard is going to show at the end of all of it. Kevin Woodley, bottom of the hour. I want to focus on Montreal here quickly. Cole Caulfield has been called up and placed on the taxi squad. Dun, 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 dun. Cole Caulfield, first round draft pick, University of Wisconsin, Hobie Baker Trophy winner. The guy fills the net, has it every single level. Montreal is having a hard time scoring. You see where I'm going with this one, Justin Bourne. They'll face off against Calgary tonight. And before Wednesday, when these two teams met, the gap between the two was 6. With a Montreal regulation win, it would have been 8. Instead, it is 4. And we've talked about the Flames needing to run the table on the Habs if they have any chance of grabbing that playoff spot. Do you have a thought on this one?
Yeah, I looked at it today from a betting perspective, and the Calgary Flames have let me down all season long. Like every time there's a moment, you're like, "Here come the Flames!" They have let me down. I just don't, you know. I could talk myself into the Flames, you know, winning some games and making it interesting. They're not coming all the way back on Montreal. I just think that, you know, a Habs win tonight and we go, oh, okay, they never really had much momentum at all. So I think the Habs get it done tonight. They need to turn things around themselves, by the way. I think Dom Ducharme, his record now is, what, 500 or worse. So it's things are not going great for the Canadien right now.
Yeah, the coaching changes haven't worked out as they may have been planned for the teams that have done them this season. But listen, man, here's the thing, though. Most seasons, is there not one team that turns it on at the end? Now, you might say we've already seen that team in the Nashville Predators. They've jumped up and grabbed that fourth spot in the Central. Now, Chicago's bowed out themselves. They haven't done themselves any good. Dallas has essentially injured themselves out of that. And Columbus has Columbused themselves out of that spot. And everybody sort of handed it to Nashville. Fair point. But is there not every season that one team that makes that big push at the end? And why can't they beat Calgary?
And I've looked at this, Jeff, and I just can't figure out who it could conceivably be. Like, you know, there's just not a ton of teams that sit on the outside right now and go on a run. Montreal is a team that I considered, you know, they can get saves and they can create a lot of shots. Maybe they're a team that can go on a run. St. Louis, maybe. The Minnesota Wild, they're already in third, so I don't know if you even consider them in that mix. There's not a lot of teams on the outside that you think that, boy, you know, maybe the Rangers you think could do some climbing. The Dallas Stars, maybe, but there's not a real threat to me. The
Stars are too banged up. Stars are too banged up. I could maybe see the Rangers.
Yeah.
I could maybe see the Rangers, but the math isn't on their side, mm-hmm. right? They're, what, 4 points away from the Bruins, and the Bruins have games in hand.
Yeah, that's trouble.
And the Bruins have your guy. Taylor, money in the bank.
I do not want him to be my guy so much as I thought he'd get a point at some point here. So I put a couple bucks on it.
Oh, man, you're married to him now. Forget it. Yeah. Do we have that Jack Edwards call standing by, Dylan? We have that one? This is the call of the goal that made our man Justin Bourne both happy and put a couple of nickels in his jeans as well. Here's Jack Edwards.
Here's Taylor.
Jack Edwards, Justin Bourne. Nothing subtle. Nothing Stewie subtle fan. About Jack. the only thing that would have made that goal better is if it was a clean breakaway, like from the red line in.
Right. Let it build a little more. The what we just talked about is, you know, could you make the case that the Boston Bruins as the team to come on? Because they're the top three in that East Division, Washington, New York, and Pittsburgh, are separated by 3 points, and they're 5 points back after a win last night of that group. So if they get hot, though, they look like a pretty good hockey team last night. That was a well-played game by them. You know, if Hall adds something, Riley adds a little something, maybe they're a team that could go on a little bit of a run and make the East interesting.
Well, The first game for Taylor Hall with the Boston Bruins was like, look, man, he looked like way out of sorts. Deer in the headlights, couldn't keep the puck on his blade. Like he looked rough. He looked like Buffalo Taylor Hall. Like, just to be blunt, he looked like Buffalo Taylor Hall. Did he look more like the Taylor Hall? I don't want to say New Jersey MVP Hart Trophy Taylor Hall, but did he look closer to the Taylor Hall that you think you know?
Yeah, that much better game two in a Bruins uniform for him. And I really think that that's how it's going to go for this guy. Like, he'll be there to win some games, and he'll feel like when you're in a bad team, it feels like anything you do wrong ends up in your net. And when you're on a good team and you can take a couple of chances because it doesn't feel like everything's going to fall apart if you make a mistake, things open up because you hang onto the puck and you see the next play develop. And I just think good things are going to happen for Hall down the stretch. It's a pretty good fit for him and an opportunity to just kind of salvage a season for him that had been all but a write-off.
So something else really interesting. Matthew Barzal. You know where I'm going on this one. So Matthew Barzal has at least two candidates for a goal of the year, correct? Mm-hmm. From what we've seen far, at least two. And does he not, on that Travis Zajac goal last night, now have a candidate for assist of the year?
Yeah, what a play.
Everyone at the rink, everyone on the ice, everybody watching on their TV or tablet is watching this. Everybody bites that he's not passing that puck.
Yeah.
I'm even surprised. I bet Zajac was surprised. Whoa, where'd this thing come from? And then bang, just taps it in.
Yeah.
Easiest goal Zajac scored in years, and what a beautiful play. Beautiful play by Matthew Barzal.
That's funny because you mentioned earlier, you know, the Leafs not having Matthews and Nylander, and so the easy goal doesn't come. That's what Barzal does for his team, right? That's the easy goal. You don't have to grind it through and power it through a screen and bang in a rebound and take a punch in the face. He just does a little twirly-do behind the net. They find a free goal. This is the thing with having elite players that makes a difference is you get one or two that don't break a sweat on everyone's brow. And all of a sudden, you can find the other one or two you need to put your team over the top. And that's where the value of elite guys in the NHL lies.
He's so special. So much fun to watch. All right, let's hit a pause. Kevin Woodley on the other side from In Goal Magazine, works with us at Sportsnet out in Vancouver as well, writes for NHL.com. Your proverbial deep dive into the goaltending in the NHL right now. We will park some time talking to Kevin about Frederik Andersen and Jack Campbell. So Leafs fans, stay tuned. More with Kevin Woodley here in a couple of moments. Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. Hey, Justin Bourne.
Hello.
You've heard the... welcome back to Hockey Central, everybody, by the way. You've heard the statement, goalies are voodoo?
Yes, many times.
Do you believe that?
No, I don't. I just don't think we have a clue what we're doing outside of people like Kevin, which is why we need Kevin.
We're getting Kevin on a clean line here in a second. I remember Brian Burke once making the point, and rightfully so. We're talking about awards. We're talking about the Vezina Trophy. And he said, I don't know why we, as in general managers, vote on the Vezina Trophy. And I said, why, Berkey? He goes, because that's the position we always get wrong. Why do they give it to us to vote on the best goalie? There are no bigger mistakes and more consistent mistakes that we make than with that position. Yet we're the ones that vote for the top goalie in the NHL award.
Should be like the Ted Berkey. Lindsay. The goalie should vote on it.
Let's get Kevin Woodley aboard from In Goal, from Sportsnet, from NHL.com. Our good friend Kevin Woodley joins us on Hockey Central. Kevin, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
I'm better. I'm good and better after hearing that reference because a freaking men, they should absolutely not vote for the Vezina. And case in point, guys.
Yeah.
Last season.
Who would you have given it to?
Andrei Vasilevskiy should not have been a Vezina Trophy finalist. You can be the best goalie in the league, and he is, and not have the best season. His numbers, and I know he had the wins.
Yeah.
And the raw save percentage, but his numbers in the first half were so bad Mm-hmm. And he actually deserves credit because he learned how. This is something that not always all goalies can do, and sort of the Curtis Joseph is always the one you point to, but there's a lot of guys like this that struggle to play behind teams when they get better defensively and they're not as busy. And that was the first half for Andrei Vasilevskiy last year. And full credit to him, he emerged out of it as a better goaltender because he figured out how to. Hey, how can he worked with Ryan Hamilton, the former Hockey Canada sports psychologist, sort of mental skills coach. He handled the puck more to keep himself busy in low event games, and he came out on the other side of it as the best goalie in the second half, and he's got a Stanley Cup. But when I look at his adjusted numbers for last season, and they're in the 30s, you can't have that be a top three goaltender in the National Hockey League in your voting when he's in the 30s.
Yeah.
Like, it was – that's just too big a gap, guys. And, again, you can be the best goalie in the league – and not be the best goalie that season. And Andrei Vasilevskiy is the best goalie in the league. He's got the Stanley Cup. But that making him a Vezina Trophy finalist. And frankly, what record did he just set this year for the Tampa Bay Lightning? The most consecutive wins in a row. That record is proof why wins shouldn't count. Because whose record did he break? Do you remember?
Was it Grant Fuhr?
Louis Domingue from 2 years ago, and he hasn't been in the NHL as a regular since. So that tells you, right? No disrespect to Louis, but like that's what wins mean. Like that's the reality. So they got rid of Louis Domingue that summer in Tampa Bay. So there we go. Whew, got that off my chest. Feel better now.
No, hang on. I want to pick up on that, Kev, because I love how you lead with a hot take, and I love it right out of the gate. This guy's spitting fire, and it's awesome. So I've always maintained that when you look in the 70s and there was an era of goaltenders that started with, you know, Tony Esposito and then Ken Dryden and Jerry Cheevers and Bernie Parent, who I still consider, you know, one of, if maybe not the best of that entire era, et cetera, go right through the goalies of the 70s. I've always maintained that if Gilles Meloche had played on Boston or Montreal or later the Islanders, if he would have played on one of those teams instead of the California Seals, the Cleveland Barons, a bad Minnesota North Stars team, we'd be talking about a goaltender like Gilles Meloche amongst those names of the greats in that era. But he was just stuck on a bad team. How should we evaluate goaltenders, Kevin Woodley?
Goaltending is this is my go-to phrase. I stole it at some point, but I can't even remember who to credit for it. But
yourself now. It's yours. Greatness borrows, genius steals.
Goaltending does not exist in a vacuum. It is a function of team play, as you just said. And so we need to be able to better weight the quality that goaltenders face so that we can better judge their performance. Now, obviously, the era you're talking about, you know, we didn't have the statistics. We don't have access to, you know, the type of data that we do now to properly weight a goaltender's performance. And I think that, you know, we do now. Some of it's public. Some of it's, I think, personally, and not to get everyone riled up, there will be people that will be riled up. I have access to some of the private stuff through a company like Clearsight Analytics that Stephen Valiquette runs that dig a little deeper into shot quality, measuring the types of scoring chances. And I think that, you know, again, it's tougher because the public versus the private varies at times. But at the end of the day, no matter which one you're using, you're adding context to performance that didn't exist before. And whether that is to judge who was the best from a, you know, like who had the best season or, you know, who's actually playing, who's carrying his team and who's being carried by his team, or whether that's, you know, the way some teams are using it to, for example, you know, try and find goaltenders, you know, find diamonds in the rough, find guys that maybe would be better in their system than they were elsewhere, or at a trade deadline, how is this goalie, his style and the way he plays going to fit into our system? Plug in goalie A into Team X, and what do we think best, and it's no longer a guess, it's at least an educated guess using these stats, you know, what does he look like? What does he look like in our system? How is he going to perform? Is he worth this upgrade or this asset that we're going to pay to acquire him because we think he's actually going to be better or even for us than he was for them, or we just think the fit's good and he's going to be able to maintain what he's doing. So many times I've seen it in the past where a team goes out and acquires a goalie and then asks him to do something totally different and play away from his strengths, or gets a coach who brings in a system that Luongo and Tortorella were the prime example. Like, his strengths as a goaltender did not fit the system in front of him, and he had one of his worst statistical seasons. That's not a coincidence. Carolina investing in Eddie Lack and giving up a pick, bringing him in as a goaltender who is best in the end zone and is a point-to-point, deep inside-out goaltender, and then saying, hey, we're going to give up a whole bunch of rush chances. We want you to become a skating goaltender with backwards flow. That wasn't going to work. So too many teams may have made that mistake in the past. Hopefully with this information we have now, we see fewer of those mistakes, and we see better voting when it comes to Vezina time.
Kevin, what was the stat you were referencing when you said that Vasilevsky was in the 30s via the metrics? Is that like a goals? You said it was some sort of advanced stat, or what was that?
I mean, I don't have them in front of me, but I just remember it was like 29th in one and 32nd in the other. One was, you know, goals saved above expected per clear sight, and the other one was sort of save percentage above expected. In other words, how does your save percentage look relative to the workload, what we would expect based on the quality you faced? And in both of those, you know, we weren't talking about a top three goaltender, despite the fact we absolutely were talking about a top three goaltender in terms of wins, raw save percentage, and things like that. Listen, the reason the Tampa Bay Lightning 2 years ago were knocked out in the first round, they were like 21st in high danger even strength chances that they gave up. Last year, they were second, and they won a Stanley Cup. So they defended both anecdotally and statistically so much better on those chances. And again, like, Vasilevsky deserves a ton of credit for adjusting to a goalie who used to have to carry them to a goalie who was no longer expected to. And not all goalies can make that switch. He did. It just means that we need to weigh his performance a little differently now that he was on a team that was no longer leaning as heavily on him.
Did Pekka Rinne not do something similar? Under Barry Trotz, there was, and Rinne liked this, like a lot of shots. Like, he'd get 40 a night, you know, 20 in the first period, start to feel the puck, get into the game. And then Peter Laviolette took over, and all of a sudden it was shot suppression, you know, the rise of Matthias Ekholm. And Pekka Rinne struggled, because he wasn't feeling the puck early.
Yeah, and so he is exactly, he's a great example of someone who did this. I think you're going to see it out of Markstrom a little bit. That changed to Daryl Sutter. Jacob's a guy in Vancouver who saw a lot of what we call the 99 percenters. You know, the Canucks gave up a lot of tough chances, but they also gave up a lot from the outside. And it's the ones from the outside that you love as a goaltender, because they let you feel your way into a game. Well, he's not getting those anymore with Daryl in Calgary. Matter of fact, they used to give up a lot of them under Jeff Ward, and I liked the fit. The switch over to Daryl required an adjustment. Pekka's adjustment was, I'm going to handle every freaking puck I can. Like, have you watched him go behind the net? Even the goalie scored last year. He almost makes saves behind his net. He will go into the boards, like slam himself into the boards like he's trying to throw a check to knock down a high rim, because his ability to get out there and handle the puck allowed him to feel like he was into games where he otherwise wasn't as fully engaged, because he wasn't seeing a lot of shots. So that is one of the answers that guys come up with to sort of feel a little better about nights where they're not as busy. Obviously, there's different things. Sports, like, we've seen guys break it down into smaller segments, little reminders, cues that they use to sort of refocus at different times. So there's lots of different ways to do it. But Pekka, it was puck handling, and I think you've seen a little bit of that with Vasilevsky as well over the past year.
One of the things that I really loved, I was talking earlier on the show, when I spent time with the Toronto Marlies, I sat beside Piero Greco and you know, and heard his goalie interviews on a daily basis, or goalie meetings on a daily basis. And what always caught me was how early on a rush he would pause the video to say, you know, what are we doing here? Like, why are you out of your crease already? The shooter's not showing you anything. Or, you know, as soon as someone crossed the blue line, goaltending starts. Can tell us a little bit about defending rushes from a goaltending's perspective, and, you know, how different goaltenders look at playing rushes, I guess. And also, I'd like to know what's the best way, in your opinion, to defend rushes as a goalie.
Well, no, that depends, right? Because you've got different strengths as a goaltender, right? Like, this is one of the things I like about Dubnyk in Colorado is, you know, how he he's, I would say, end zone, other than breakaways. He's really good on breakaways. And interestingly enough, it's one of the only categories where the Avs are in the bottom half of the league in terms of the amount of chances. Like, they're so good defensively. But broken plays and breakaways are two that they give up, you know, sort of in the bottom half of the league, or, you know, broken plays is 13th, breakaways is 16th. And those are two plays that Dubnyk excels on. So that's one of the reasons I like the fit there. You have different goalies are comfortable playing rush chances with what we call backwards flow. So they will get out and challenge above the crease and then try and time their retreat with that play, you know, to sort of match their movement to the sort of pace of an attack. And then you've got goalies that sort of play it, I mean, you never play a breakaway or an odd man rush inside out necessarily, sort of goal line out, but they'll just hold their ground at a certain position and try and be patient and sort of not move too much. And then if a pass gets made, there's less risk of getting caught further out if it's a pass early in the zone, because obviously if I'm 2 feet above my crease and they pass it just as they cross the blue line, to get to the other side of my crease, I've got to travel an extra, you know, not quite 4 feet, but 2 feet out one way means an extra 2 feet the other way to get to that same position. It's a much bigger distance. So that guy that's holding his edges at the top of the crease, that's a much simpler movement. It's a shorter movement. He can beat that pass more easily. The other thing about playing with backwards flow, whether you're a skater or a goaltender, you can relate to this, right? Like, how do you move backwards? Sort of little C cuts with your skates, right? Yeah. And for a goalie, imagine if I'm doing C cuts back and forth, I'm shifting my weight from one side to the other, right? So if that pass comes, and let's say it's from my right to my left, and that pass comes, and my weight is on my left skate for that part of my little C cuts backwards, I can't move with that pass until I transfer the weight back to my right skate, because that's the one I push off. So in other words, that's why we, in general terms, talk about guys who play with flow and more movement and that element in their game. They typically require to be, they need to be a little better with their reads, and they rely a little more on rhythm and timing, because there's less margin for error. There's more chance you're getting caught on a wrong skate if you sort of aren't quick with a read on the release of a pass or a shot. So there's no one answer, Justin. Like, there's no, because there's no one way to play goal. There's no one style of goaltender. I like to look at it as there's three or four different elements, and each guy exists on a sliding scale of those elements, whether it's reaction to blocking, and everybody has to find their sweet spot. And sometimes guys don't find their sweet spot early in their careers, or they'll think they're a certain style of goaltender. They'll get a new goaltending coach, a new voice, either in the off season or maybe with a new team, and something will click that if they do it differently, they can have more success, and they'd never thought of it. So that's a lot of what you see in terms of, you know, we call them late bloomers. Sometimes guys don't necessarily just have the right voice early on.
What are your thoughts on the Maple Leafs goaltending situation and the three of them? The Frederik Andersen, who's now appeared back on the ice, Jack Campbell, who got the hook last night, and the newly acquired Dave Riddick. And if you could do it in 3 minutes, bless you.
Me in 3 minutes. That's going to be true. Listen, from the outside, it seems all about health, right? Clearly, Frederik Andersen was playing through something and it was affecting his game. So obviously the goal is to get him back healthy. Jack Campbell, you know, was playing or has been managing an injury throughout. And so a lot of people look at David Riddick as purely an insurance policy. But I really like him as a fit and an insurance policy for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again,
why is that?
Well, I mean, let's take a look at, you know, the types of chances that they give up. Like, we'd agree that they are an improved defensive team this year, right? Mm-hmm. But they still, like, they give up broken plays, like sort of plays that hit things and bounce around in the slot and in dangerous areas. You know, they're bottom third of the league, or just outside of that. They're 19th in the league on the amount of broken plays they give up. Well, David Riddick, as a guy, and there's reasons for this, like, you can get into analyzing the style and the reasons why, but David Riddick is actually, like, he outperforms broken plays at a pretty high level. Like, the types of plays that they've been getting hurt on that they still give up more than you'd like to see, David Riddick excels. He's well above expected on high danger broken broken plays. And stylistically, you can look at the fact that he's able to play from a really low, wide stance. I think that some of his troubles, you know, again, you look at screens, not so good on screens. Part of that's because he's playing from that low, wide stance, which doesn't allow him to easily look over screens. So there's that give and take, right? That sliding scale. It helps him on these chances, hurts him on those. Well, the Leafs give up more of the chances it helps him on than they do screens, which they happen to be top 10 in the league on screen chances again. So you're in that give and take equation, that constant back and forth. He might be a really good fit. You know that nickname that he came with from Calgary, Big Save Dave?
Yep.
It exists for a reason. If you look at his success on high danger chances over the past 3 years, it's amongst the tops in the league. Like, he's done really well on high percentage chances, like cross ice plays, slot line plays, like broken plays in dangerous areas. Those are strengths of his. The Leafs don't need that help on slot line plays, but they certainly do on broken plays, and that's just one piece of a bigger puzzle that he happens to fit really well for them. And so as much as he's an insurance policy, he's one that, given the opportunity, could do quite well.
This is fascinating. We're up against it. Kevin, always good having you aboard. Look forward to having you back on to share your expertise. The one thing that I want, give me one name quickly, going to break. Who is the best goalie in the NHL right now?
It's still Vasilevsky. See, like I said, just because he is doesn't mean he deserved the Vezina finalist nod last year, but he still is to me.
All right, there we go. All right, he's the would you agree with me he's the modern-day version of Dominik Hasek, or is that a stretch?
Nobody plays like Hasek. I'm not sure anyone ever will, but in terms of the ability to contort like Gumby, and I remember talking with goalie coaches that trained him in the offseason in Ottawa, and they measured his ability to generate power from extended range. So imagine, like, your legs already out. We talk about low and wide, and most guys don't have any power left to push. He still generates a ton of power from end range of movement, and that's why he's able to go Gumby the way he is and able to not just move across the crease when in situations and in contortions that nobody else can, but do it with power and control. It's frankly sick to watch.
You're fantastic. Kevin, thanks so much for stopping by. Kevin Woodley from Sportsnet out in Vancouver, also from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Up against the clock. Back in a moment. Hockey Central in moments. More of it. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, Justin, we're back for a quick 60. Smith and Jones coming up top of the hour on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The week began here with trade deadline day. Came and went. These are your teams. Off to the races. Playoff push now. As we look at today's schedule, Vancouver and Edmonton off the board. That game postponed, as we all know. I know you don't care too much about Montreal, Calgary. I find that game interesting, maybe because me and Stewie are working
care.
It. You just don't believe in Calgary. You have little.
I'm a doubter, that's all.
So what do you got your eyeballs on tonight? And what do you have? What's opening up your wallet tonight in these games?
Well, I am interested in that Montreal-Calgary game. I think Montreal gets a win there. But also, is Boston really a rebuilt, better team after the trade deadline? I think there's a possibility that they are, and that Taylor Hall's going to make a difference for that team. So we shall see.
Boston Bruins taking on the New York Islanders. We are back Monday with more Hockey Central.